The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
The Nicole Sandler Show. Questioning authority daily. And that could be the very reason why YouTube is upset. Hey, YouTube. The music bed you hear beneath my voice is from a broadcast sound library that I pay for and have the receipts. So I've got your copyright violation right here. And now, here's Nicole.
Welcome to a Wednesday, everyone. It's the morning after the last debate, if you can call it a debate. I referred to it in What's News as a clusterfuck. Of course, I had to bleep the fuck part, but wow, what a mess that was. We'll get to it. I've got clips, and the one and only Drift Glass is going to join us in just a little while to weigh in on all that happened. I want to start right off with a bit of the funny, and this funny, actually a couple of listeners sent it to me. It's from Monday evening, but it still works. I don't often pull from Seth Meyers, but this time he was spot on. So, take it away, Seth.
Bernie has now won the popular vote in the first three primary contests, making him the clear frontrunner, and now Politico is reporting that Bernie Sanders has sent the Democratic establishment into panic mode. And you can tell because the general tenor of the coverage on cable news has gone something like this.
NBC News projects Bernie Sanders, the winner in Nevada.
What the f*** is going on?
Yeah, that's about how they reacted.
Pundits across cable news have been freaking out about Bernie's rise. For example, you might remember that after Bernie won the popular vote in Iowa and again in New Hampshire, the story wasn't that he was winning, but that if you use pundit math, he was actually losing.
Right. I don't understand how Bernie is considered a front runner.
In New Hampshire, 52% of voters wanted either Pete Buttigieg or Amy Klobuchar or Joe Biden.
Klobuchar?
Moderates are winning. Okay.
Why wasn't Buttigieg's win in Iowa a bigger banner headline? He also has upset Bernie Sanders in both states.
The story
of
the
night.
No,
he didn't.
Amy Klobuchar, now in third place.
The story of the Sanders campaign so far this year is how much ground he's lost from 4 years ago.
That's right. By winning states, Bernie is actually losing ground. See, according to the pundits, you don't want to actually win the first two states like Bernie did. You want to follow the Joe Biden path, coming fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire, and a distant second in Nevada. Right. And on top of all that, just wander over during a crucial debate and give the front runner a hug. You know?
Which he did.
It's the first time Biden ever hugged someone from an angle where they could see him coming. Oh. And not only did some pundits insist that Bernie wasn't actually the front runner after winning the first two states, they also created an elaborate mythology in their heads where Bernie was only winning because the so-called moderates were supposedly splitting the vote. And they kept insisting that if the moderates would just coalesce around one candidate, that candidate could beat Bernie.
Right.
Bernie Sanders may have eked out the most votes in Iowa and New Hampshire, but if you look at the numbers more closely, it shows a candidate hitting a ceiling. If you look at the combined percentages among the centrist candidates, they do much better than the progressives.
When you add up the totals, though, for Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, and Joe Biden, when you add them up last night, that's more than half the electorate backing a moderate.
Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Biden split the moderate vote with their combined percentage overwhelming that of Sanders, who got 26%.
That's right. If you just combine the votes of Buttigieg, Biden, and Klobuchar, you can beat Bernie. Now, all you have to do is find a way to genetically combine them into one candidate called the Klobu-Buttigieg-Buttigieg-Char.
Touche.
And then every time you ask it a question, it has the same answer. What should we do about health care?
We must step forward into the future.
I'm from Minnesota.
Corn Pop was a bad dude.
Even the pundits and Bernie himself could not deny his clear status as the frontrunner after an overwhelming victory in Nevada on Saturday, the first diverse state to vote in the primary, in which Sanders seemed to win virtually every demographic.
Sanders indeed won a smashing across-the-board victory, according to our entrance poll. He won among men and women, college graduates and non-college graduates, liberals and moderate/conservatives, union and non-union members, people who decided early and people who decided late. In short, Sanders crushed it.
Take a look here among self-described moderate or conservative Democrats. That's a third of this electorate in Nevada. Mm-hmm. This is what you're seeing. Sanders is actually leading.
NBC Wall Street Journal poll asked,
Who are you most enthusiastic or comfortable about when it comes to the Democratic nominee? Bernie Sanders leads with 65%.
He was powered by young voters, Hispanic voters, very liberal, and those who supported Medicare for All.
Damn, he won union voters, non-union voters, young voters, Hispanic voters, men, women, liberals, and conservatives. And based on this photo, he even did well with former vice presidents over 70.
It was
and
Joe Biden
still,
hugging him again.
Cable News reacted with shock at Bernie's success in Nevada. For example, his results were coming in, and it was clear that young voters and people of color were going overwhelmingly for Sanders. One anchor at a caucus site audibly sighed as she reported the results.
Largely people of color. Of those, the majority are Latino, and they are clearly, at least from eyeballing it, strongly in favor of Bernie Sanders with Joe Biden coming in second.
Oh my goodness, did you hear that? Huh. Oh my God. That was MSNBC's own Chris Jansing who, you know, let her exasperation at the fact that Bernie Sanders was clearly winning speak volumes. Wow. You know, look, we've talked about, thank you, Seth Meyers. That was a brilliant, and that was only part of it. I had to cut it down because I couldn't let it go on for 12 minutes. So, yeah, you know, gee, he makes a lot of sense. And I know I'm a glutton for punishment. I keep going on the Twitters. So yesterday I'm on Twitter and I remembered something that Lawrence O'Donnell had said. I remembered when Lawrence O'Donnell, went on television and proclaimed he was a proud socialist. In fact, I recall him doing it a number of times. And so I'm scrolling through Twitter trying to find the exchange. So I called him out on Twitter yesterday. I wasn't even meaning to call him out. I was just starting a conversation. And what I wrote is, let's see if I can, if this is the whole thread. Yeah, no, it isn't. So let me just scroll down a little more. My Twitter has been crazy since yesterday when Nina Turner, retweeted me. Okay. So I wrote yesterday afternoon on Twitter, don't I recall at Lawrence, that's his Twitter handle, at Lawrence, proudly proclaiming on the air, quote, I am a socialist. What happened? Was he ordered to toe the Comcast line to be anti-Bernie too? And shocker, a couple hours later, Lawrence O'Donnell tweeted back to me, quote, European socialist, he wrote. First said it on TV in 1996. First realized it in my first economics class in college. To which I replied, thanks for the answer. Not a designation I'm familiar with. Different from democratic socialism? Why all the negativity about Bernie? And he responded again. He said, there's nothing about socialism that's anti-democratic. So for people who don't know what socialism is, I prefer identifying the countries that are using it the way I would. Fair enough. So I wrote back, I've looked at a number of clips of you explaining that you're a socialist, but haven't found one where you said, quote, European socialist. Not that that really matters. I'm just wondering why your attitude on the air is so different from your Twitter and stated ideology. To which he responded, stated ideology? What does that mean? Can you give me some examples of ideology quotes? And I answered that you're an extreme socialist. Sounds like a stated ideology to me. Am I wrong? And in case you're wondering, here's what he said.
I, Glenn, unlike you,
to Glenn
I am
Greenwald.
Not a progressive. I am not a liberal who's so afraid of the word that I had to change my name to progressive.
I'm not either.
Liberals amuse me. I am a socialist. I live to the extreme left.
Great.
The extreme left of you mere liberals, okay?
Wow. So he wrote back to me, socialism isn't or shouldn't be an ideology. It's simply an optional form of government intervention to mitigate or eliminate harmful effects of markets like the high costs of the healthcare. Practical problem solving isn't an ideology. To which I answered, okay, but you still haven't answered my initial question. It sounds as if your beliefs are right in line with Sanders. So why the scorched earth approach to him on TV? It's really a simple question. And of course, you can guess what his response is going to be to that, right? Okay, please quote me the scorched earth commentary. To which I said, when you answer the simple question I posed of you, I'll go find some of your scorched earth commentary. It's all there. So that was that initial, exchange. And then let's see. Okay. Then he says, in America, extreme left doesn't mean extreme socialist. It means Medicare for all, which is considered extreme left only in the USA. So finally, I said, how about coming on my show to discuss it with me? I'm a 40-year radio veteran, moved my show online from Air America the night the network went under 10 years ago last month. I'm happy to tape something anytime at your convenience or do it live any day between 3 and 4 Eastern. To which he responded, love to. Let's continue this on your show. That was at 11:01 this morning. Even though I've written back a couple of times, great, when would you like to do it? I'm on the air at 3 this afternoon. Care to join me then? We can do it live. Crickets. And then a couple hours later, I asked again. Crickets. And funny, Lawrence has gone silent since 11:01 this morning. So if you're on Twitter, please tweet at Lawrence. That's his whole Twitter handle, L-A-W-R-E-N-C-E, Lawrence. I guess he was one of the early ones on Twitter. And ask him when he's coming on my show. I will be respectful. I will be polite, just as I was in that exchange. But I don't understand. If he is a self-described extreme liberal socialist, let's hear him say it again.
I, Glenn, unlike you, I am not a progressive. I am not a liberal who's so afraid of the word that I had to change my name to progressive.
I'm not either.
Liberals amuse me. I am a socialist.
Ooh.
I live to the extreme left.
Great.
The extreme left of you mere liberals. Okay.
He lives to the extreme left of us mere liberals. He's a socialist. So, Lawrence O'Donnell, if you're a socialist, what's with all the Bernie vitriol? And again, he's been silent since 11:01 this morning, 4 hours, and then some. So I throw it out there. All right. As I mentioned, the debate happened last night. We've got a lot. It's out there. It's an open invitation. And as I said, we'll start the show with him any day at 3 Eastern. If he wants to do it on a Monday, I'll do it live on a Monday. If he wants to do it to tape it at another time and, you know, maybe concerned that this big, bad radio person might edit some words, I'll do it live on my stream, audio stream, and on YouTube whenever he wants to tape it. All I have to do is flip a couple of switches. I can do that because it's the internet. You know, so Lawrence, it's in your court. You're more than welcome here. I promise you a civil conversation, but I really want to know what kind of directive came down from on high at Comcast to make you so anti the one candidate who espouses the same political philosophy you have. If you don't want to call it an ideology, that's just fine. He's a democratic socialist. You say you're a flat-out socialist. Extreme liberal, to the left of the liberals. So what's your problem with Bernie Sanders? Ball's in your court. All right, let's get to the news, shall we? Because there's a lot to get to, and then Driftglass is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about the debate. And a piece he wrote at both his blog at driftglass.blogspot.com and Crooks and Liars, saying to the Never Trumpers, mind your own fucking business. What I've been saying all along, but you know, you knew that. All right, so let's do the news, and we'll do it live.
The news today, oh boy.
We'll do it live.
Okay, fuck it.
Do it live.
Do it live.
I'll write it, and we'll do it live.
All right, I'm a pro. I can do it live.
Fucking thing sucks.
Fucking thing. Damn it. I can do it live if I can find my copy, which is hiding on my desktop somewhere, and it won't open. I know it's here. Hold on. And this is the new computer, which has been working really well, but occasionally gets a little temperamental. Okay. So, as I said earlier, it wasn't so much a debate last night in South Carolina as much as it was a giant clusterfuck. CBS proved that not every network is deserving of a presidential debate. This one just might have been the worst yet. The New York Times wrote of the spectacle, quote, the forum plunged repeatedly into an unsightly spectacle, there's that word, of flailing hands and raised voices and even outright chaos, with candidates talking over one another and the moderator struggling and failing at times to direct an orderly argument. My correction of that copy, the moderators never tried to direct an orderly argument. They simply watched the clock and tried to cut off the candidates who clearly didn't give a shit about following simple rules and often without considering the substance of what was being discussed. I've got some examples of that we'll get to. The first mention of the coronavirus didn't even come until more than 80 minutes into the two-hour-long debate, and I think it was brought up by Michael Bloomberg, not the moderators. And not a single question was asked about climate change. Unreal. Someone obviously told Michael Bloomberg that he should show off his sense of humor.
Let me also say, because it just since I have the floor for a second, that I really am surprised that all of these, my fellow contestants up here, I guess would be the right word for it, given
yeah,
nobody pays attention
show.
To the clock. I'm surprised they show up because I would have thought after I did such a good job in beating them last week that they'd be a little bit afraid to do that.
Can I? What?
But let me just say, when you're talking about affordable housing.
But that wasn't all. Wait, he tried it again.
Mayor Bloomberg, as mayor of New York, you declared war on obesity. You banned trans fats from restaurants, and you tried to do the same with large sugary drinks. So if you become president, will you push those policies on the national level as well?
Well, I think what's right for New York City isn't necessarily right for all the other cities. Otherwise, you'd have a naked cowboy in every city. So let's
all right.
get serious here.
Let's get serious here. It was serious until you tried to make a joke that fell a little flat. Oh, well. And of course, well, you know, the vitriol was mostly focused on the front runner, Bernie Sanders. In fact, I saw a graphic somewhere in my travels this morning that Bernie was attacked 33 times. Bloomberg was second in terms of incoming attacks at 17. And then it went down from there, like Buttigieg and Biden each got hit 7 times, and Klobuchar and Warren 3. But, you know, they came after Bernie with, guns blazing. Where did I hear it?
I like Bernie. We came in together to the Senate, but I do not think that this is the best person to lead the ticket.
Bernie Sanders' analysis is right. The difference is I don't like his solutions.
Bernie and I both want to see universal health care, but Bernie's plan doesn't explain how to get there.
Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States, and that's why Russia is helping you get elected, so you'll lose to him.
Yeah, so there's a little bit of that. Of course, Bernie pushed back.
Hey, Mr. Putin, if I'm president of the United States, trust me, you're not going to interfere in any more American elections. And if you want to beat Trump, what you're going to need is an unprecedented grassroots movement of black and white and Latino, Native American and Asian people who are standing up and fighting for justice.
Can anybody,
that's what our movement
can anybody
is
in this
about.
Room imagine moderate Republicans going over and voting for him?
Yes.
And you have to do that or you can't win.
What we need to do is to do what every other major country on earth does, guarantee health care to all people. Occasionally, it might be good idea to be honest about American foreign policy.
Maybe.
And when dictatorships, whether it is the Chinese or the Cubans, do something good, you acknowledge that.
Okay. This man said that, in fact, he thought it was, he did not condemn what
they
did.
That is untrue, categorically untrue.
What did you tell him?
I have condemned authoritarianism, whether it is the people in Saudi Arabia that the United States government
has Cuba,
loved
Nicaragua?
For years. Cuba, Nicaragua. Authoritarianism of any stripe is bad.
By the way, my goodness, I guess Joe Biden thought, you know, the way we've all said Bernie yells for me, Biden thought he would give it a shot last night. He yelled everything. Just saying. And also, you wouldn't be alone if you noticed the cheering section for Michael Bloomberg and Joe Biden and the occasional boos for Bernie Sanders and even Elizabeth Warren. Well, we could chalk that up because tickets were sold for between $1,750 for the cheap seats in the back and $3,200 for the seats up front to sponsors. Yes, it was a paid audience. Now, I was at one of the primary debates here in Miami in 2016, and I got tickets from the Bernie Sanders campaign. Each campaign was allocated a certain number of tickets, and that's how they were all distributed. I guess some were distributed that way in South Carolina, but a good portion of them were held back and sold for between $1,750 and $3,200 a seat to, quote, sponsors. And funny, one of the sponsors I saw during the commercial breaks in the debate on CBS was Michael Bloomberg's campaign. Can't make this shit up. Yeah, not very democratic of the Democratic Party. The next Democratic face-off among candidates is scheduled for March 15th in Phoenix, 2 days before the Phoenix primary, 2 days before the Florida primary on March 17th. It'll be broadcast on CNN and Univision. By that time, 24 states and a bunch of territories will have already weighed in. So I have a feeling we won't be seeing seven candidates on stage on March 15th, which happens to be the Ides of March. All right. On to other news. The coronavirus is undoubtedly the biggest story across the globe, but Donald Trump is lying to the American people about it. Not that that should surprise you, because he lies every time he opens his goddamn mouth.
The coronavirus, which is, very well under control in our country. We have very few people with it. The people are getting better. We're all getting better. I think that whole situation will start working out. A lot of talent, a lot of brain power is being put behind it.
Oh,
$2.5 billion we're putting in. There's a very good chance you're not going to die. Now they have it. They have studied it. They know very much. In fact, we're very close to a vaccine.
Oh my goodness. There's a very good chance you're not going to die. Gee, thanks, Donald. And we're very close to a vaccine. No, we're not. And in fact, Trump lying through his teeth wasn't bad enough. His White House chief economic advisor, Larry Kudlow. Now, this guy is high on the credibility quotient, because he's the same guy who advised everyone to buy stocks in September of 2008, just as the crash was happening. He doubled down on the misinformation.
We have contained this. We have contained this. I won't say airtight, but pretty close to airtight. We've done a good job in the United States. Hats off to our public health people.
Right. Now, while he was speaking, the Dow was tanking. It's down over 1,900 points in just 2 days. Oh, I should check and see where it is now, because honestly, I haven't. Let's just take a look, shall we? Dow Jones Industrial Average. Sorry, I work without a producer. I can, as of right now, it's only down 57 points. So I guess that's a bit of a recovery. Anyway, I digress. How did I close that window? Me and computers, we do not get along. All right. So back to the news. Anyway, So the Dow was tanking. It was tanked, went down 1,900 points in just 2 days. And Kudlow made that claim after a top infectious disease expert at the Centers for Disease Control, Dr. Nancy Messonnier, I'm sure I'm butchering her name, the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases, warned of an inevitable outbreak.
Ultimately, we expect we will see community spread in this country. It's not so much a question of if this will happen anymore, but rather more of a question of exactly when this will happen and how many people in this country will have severe illness.
Yeah, not a question of if, but when. And those morons, it's all under control. We've got it contained. Yeah, right. Talk to me in a few weeks. By the way, U.S. cases have risen to 57, with a U.S. soldier stationed in South Korea also testing positive for the virus. Oh, and by the way, you know, there's that little event called the Summer Olympics that are happening in about, or supposed to happen in about 3 months in Tokyo, Japan. The organizers say they can wait until late May to decide the fate of the Summer Games. Japan has already reported 170 cases. of the coronavirus and one death. Yeah, the Olympic Games have never been canceled before. Thankfully, we still have a semi-functioning Congress for now anyway. And the Senate Appropriations Subcommittee held a hearing yesterday at which Republican Senator John Kennedy questioned an uninformed and ill-prepared acting Secretary of Homeland Security. His name is Chad Wolf. And again, he's acting, so he didn't have to be confirmed by the Senate, because this is the way Donald Trump does things now.
Right, you're head of Homeland Security. Do we have enough respirators or not?
For patients? I don't understand the question.
For everybody, every American who needs one, who gets the disease.
Again, I would refer you to HHS on that.
Mr. Secretary,
my budget supports,
you're supposed to keep a secret.
My budget supports the men and women
you're
of the Department
Secretary
of Homeland Security.
You're the Secretary of Homeland Security.
Yes, sir.
And you can't tell me if we have enough respirators.
For the entire American public?
Yes.
No, I would say probably not.
Okay, how short are we?
I don't have that number offhand, Senator. I will get that for you.
Okay. But I want to be sure I understand. Somebody.
Yes, sir.
Is doing modeling.
Yes, sir.
On how many cases were anticipated.
You're yes,
just
sir.
Not
yes,
aware
sir.
Of them.
You're asking me a number of medical questions that
I'm asking
CDC
you questions because you're the Secretary of
are
the Department
focusing on.
Of Homeland Security, and you're supposed to keep us safe.
Yes, sir.
And you need to know the answers to these questions.
Yes, sir. You do. There's another question. I don't have the tape of it, but he asked him about the death rate, and what we're hearing is from the coronavirus, it's at about 2%. And then he said, and what about the flu, the influenza that's, you know, going around now? Is that in the same? He's like, yeah, that's in the same, you know, 2% area. And Kennedy said, are you sure about that? And he said, well, I don't have the exact numbers, but yeah, it's in the ballpark. Hold on. No, that's wrong. It's like 0.1%, like 0.1% as opposed to 2%. And when you're talking about a pandemic, that's a big difference. So Kennedy then questioned the director of Health and Human Services, Alex Azar, who, by the way, former and probably future big pharmaceutical executive.
The secretary of the Department of Homeland Security, which is charged with keeping us safe, just testified about 10 minutes ago, a month and a half. Which is it?
One could not develop a vaccine in a month and a half. That's never happened in human history.
Maybe you ought to talk to the Secretary of Homeland Security before he spreads that too far.
Yeah. And I understand the hearings are continuing today, so maybe we'll have some more fun questions and answers to share with you tomorrow. Meanwhile, as for that statement I made a few minutes ago of that we have a semi-functioning Congress, well, a group of 70 count them, 70 former U.S. senators, including 18 Republicans, suggested in a Washington Post op-ed that senators, create a bipartisan caucus of incumbent senators who would be committed to making the Senate function as the framers of the Constitution intended. Because, as they say, quote, the legislative process is no longer working in the Senate. I guess what they say, the first step is admitting you have a problem. Yeah, I know I'm making an alcoholic an analogy here, but I mean, that's the best analogy I can come up with, because these people are like dry drunks. They're going through the motions, but they're not functioning very well. All right. We had a debate last night. I've got more clips than I played. I also have our pal Drift Glass, so I'll tell you what. Let's get Drift Glass on the line in case you're going, who is this Drift Glass of who Nicole speaks? Well, he's one of the OG bloggers. He was in the original group of the blogosphere, along with Digby and, you know, the original gangsters of the blogosphere. Drift Glass, who now, well, still blogs at driftglass.blogspot.com and co-hosts the Professional Left podcast with his wife, the lovely and talented blue gal Fran, who does her own blog and also you can find at Crooks and Liars. So let's wait no longer, shall we?
Go, go, go! Take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Drift Glass.
When this old world starts getting me
No, that's the Drifters. This is Drift Glass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Drift Glass with Nicole Sandler.
I it never gets old for me. Hey, Drift
Glass.
Yeah. You know,
I got a smile on my face.
Good.
A song in my heart.
Yeah, you know, hey, you're one of the old crew who has your own intro. Woo-hoo.
Decade of service. We've been podcasting now, my wife and I, for a little over 10 years.
Wow.
Every Friday without fail, 530-something episodes. So,
And you know what? And I don't even want to talk about how long I've been doing this. I moved this show online exclusively the night Air America Radio went off the air, because at the time I was doing the 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern show. And when I got the news that the network was done, I just moved online. That was 10 years ago, January 21st. And I know the date because it was also the same day that the Supreme Court ruled on Citizens United.
Yep. And coming up in about a month or so, it'll be my 15-year blog-iversary. So,
Wow.
I've been doing this a while. I've been at this rodeo a while.
You have been. And we still don't know what you look like.
Well, yeah. There's pictures of me out floating around.
I do, because I met you and Fran at Netroots Nation.
At Netroots Nation, that's right.
Right. At, I want to say Vegas. Was it? No.
We did St. Louis, Minnesota, and Chicago.
Oh, then it was Minnesota. It was Minnesota, and it was after I was arrested at that Alan West town hall meeting, because you guys came up to me and gave me the nicest greeting, and you know, because of that, I was, you know, somewhat, what's the word, infamous, I guess, because
Shimmeled? I love that.
So, before we get into the debate last night, I want to ask you a piece you wrote last week at your blog at driftglass.blogspot.com that was also cross-posted at Crooks and Liars, was something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing, but tell those goddamn never-Trumpers to mind their own fucking business.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I've been saying this for so long. Thank you.
Congratulations. You have summarized my entire oeuvre for the last year in one sentence. So I congratulate you on your efficiency with language.
And I work hard on that. You know, I like to use the word fuck to its best abilities. And
it's a blogger word. It was the word. Now, this is quite serious. A little, little history. This is one of the words we use to mark ourselves as outsiders. Back when the Bush administration was, you know, in high cotton and we had no media at all.
Right.
And it was a term that we sort of self-identified. We used it deliberately. And I mean, my theory is that I own the entire English language and so do you. We use every word in it.
Damn straight.
And do so joyously.
That's right.
Fuck is a lovely word that should never be abused, but should always be used correctly when appropriate.
And it's a multi-purpose word. It works on so many different levels.
It is.
Yeah. So.
Well, as to the subject at hand, yes, as you know, probably, my opinion of never-Trumpers generally, there are a couple of exceptions. Let me start with that.
Okay.
Bruce Bartlett has said online, I will vote for, tomorrow I'm going out to vote for Elizabeth Warren because we have to get this SOB out of the White House.
Cool.
I do so proudly, et cetera. Great. Cool. Good. Way to go, man. Every other one of them, with almost without exception, feels they have a God-given right to interfere in our primary, tell us how to run things, tell us who we should vote for, who they will not vote for,
right.
How to best court their good favor. You know, this is like 17 people who have for some weird reason, complete unfettered access to the media. They are given seats at the table. They have book contracts. They're given columns in the Washington Post, the New York Times. And have never been right about anything.
Right.
These are the same people who destroyed their own political
Exactly. Exactly.
For money.
Yeah.
For money.
Yeah.
And these are the same people that bulldozed over you and I and people like us for decades.
Mm-hmm.
As we were telling them, you are unleashing a darkness on this country that you will live to regret. And they told us we were crazy and stupid and un-American and sit down and shut up. And we were marginalized. That's at least one of the many, many reasons Air America went off the air.
That's right.
That's one of the many reasons why there is no liberal media.
That's
because
right.
Liberals is a dirty word, like socialism. Ooh,
yeah.
Booga booga.
Right.
And it turns out we were right all along.
Yeah.
And so as a reward, we are still marginalized. And these assholes still have some gargantuan, outsized
balls.
Presence in the media.
Oh, sorry.
And they are, I've said this before, Russian royalty.
Mm-hmm.
They were dispossessed by their own revolution. They're hated by the peons on the right who they exploited.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're living on our couch telling us how to wash the dishes and what they'd like for dinner. And we better hop to when they tell us what to do.
You're so right.
It's like, shut up. Go fix your party. And they only made up for, well, we can't do that. That's broken.
Man. You know, I tweeted at one of them. It might have been Jennifer Rubin. It might have been Bill Kristol. Oh. One of them who popped up in my Twitter stream telling me, don't you dare, you know, nominate a Bernie Sanders or an Elizabeth Warren because we won't vote for you. I'm like, you're Republicans. You're the ones who are responsible for bringing us Donald Trump. You dirtied up your own house. Now you're trying to come in ours to tell us how to do things here. Go clean your own house first. I got to tell you, the attacks I got, like, we need a big tent. We need to welcome everybody. Fuck that shit.
Yeah. Well, that's why it is helpful to have an archive that goes back 15 years because I will eventually put on my I told you so shoes and do a little dance and say, remember when I told you this is that you were going to wake up in a bathtub in ice with your kidneys missing and these people are going to be out having another book deal while you sort of rot in hell?
Mm-hmm.
It is going to happen. It is going to, and it's happening right now. It's happening right in front of us. These people are using the microphones, which they do not in any way deserve, to try to bully us into believing that, look, Bill Weld is running in your party.
Right.
He's a perfectly nice man. I disagree with him on everything, but he's not a lunatic.
Nope.
Go work for him.
Yes.
And the dirty secret is they know that he doesn't stand a chance because the entire Republican Party, from root to fruit, is insane. And they helped make it that way. This is the party they built. And they built a party that would inevitably produce a Donald Trump, and now that it has, they would, again, like to crash on our sofa, mooch off of us until the smoke has cleared, and then go run Marco Rubio, which is, you know, damn well is what they're planning to do. So, and I'm using my little itty-bitty platform to say, look, and no one's gonna listen to me. You know, that's just inevitable. I have pissed off enough people in the media that, occasionally, I will say this, I do get DMs from people, who say, yeah, I know you're right.
Right.
I know you. I can't say publicly that this is true because I'm already in deep with management. And if I do it one more time, I'm out the door.
Wow.
And I frankly prefer my mortgage to my righteous indignation.
Right. Well, and I get that. But look, a perfect example. I tried to run this audit. I've been wanting to do it for weeks. Finally got together a few listeners to help audit MSNBC for a week to keep track of the ratio of, you know, guests and paid contributors, who are, you know, never Trumpers, Republicans, Republican strategists to Democrats and progressives. Everything was screwed up last week because of the debate and the primaries and they seem to have taken a break from the onslaught, the overabundance of never Trumpers to focus on the more, as I like to refer to them, conservadems, the holier than thou Democrats who, like, don't you dare, you know, run a Bernie Sanders. He'll destroy the party. So they're focusing on those, you know, as Howie Klein puts it, the Republican wing of the Democratic Party. Instead of the actual never Trumpers. So I guess Jennifer Rubin and Bill Kristol David Jolly and the Carlos Curbelo and the list goes on and on and on.
Steve Schmidt.
Oh my God. Yeah. Got a bit of a break last week in favor of the James Carvilles instead, who are even just batshit crazier. But so yesterday I'm going through my thing and I'm going through the logs and seeing who the people had on. And I remembered Lawrence O'Donnell from a few years ago and hearing him proudly proclaim, I am a socialist.
Yes.
And in fact, I pulled the clip. Here it is.
Hi, Glenn. Unlike you, I am not a progressive. I am not a liberal who's so afraid of the word that I had to change my name to progressive.
I'm not either.
Liberals amuse me. I am a socialist. I live to the extreme left.
Right.
The extreme left of you mere liberals, okay?
So if that's the case, why is he so horrible when it comes to Bernie Sanders? Why does he want to take this man down?
I have no... Well, he doesn't confide in me like he used to.
No,
you know?
No, me
neither. Because we're both tall Irish guys. We have kind of a big chip on our shoulders. And we write. I mean, he's a good writer.
Yeah, he is.
I have never been slapped on the West Wing in my role as young Jed Bartlett's father. Right. So those things have not happened to me.
Uh-huh.
I have no idea. I don't audit them. I mean, I write about media a lot, as you know.
Well, I tried. I'll send you my logs if you want them. It's not a pretty thing from last week.
I would appreciate that.
Okay.
But for example, Rachel Maddow, who's a lovely person and wonderful, and she's, you know, a shining light on the air. And Chris Hayes, who I like.
Chris Hayes, I exclude Chris Hayes from this conversation. He is the one bright shining light over there. And occasionally Katie Turr. But the rest of them, I don't know what has happened to them. And I'm guessing that some memo came down from Comcast land saying, don't cross us on this. We do not want a socialist in the White House or something that maybe that wasn't that blatant. But I think the message was clear, as it was to Ed Schultz before he was fired from MSNBC for daring to want to cover Bernie Sanders' campaign.
Well, there used to be someone named Melissa Harris Perry on the
show. Oh, yes, there was.
And then she was replaced by Hugh Hewitt. Oh, my God. Hugh Hewitt. Try to find a whiter, paler, more crackpot. You know, as I say, every time I write about him, he is a cyborg sent from the future to destroy America. And that is who he is. And every time he goes in there, he proves it.
Right. And he was on Meet the Press this Sunday showing that Chuck Todd will never learn. But I digress. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think learning is the thing. I really think there is – we're watching, the purpose of cable news is to sell, as we've said before on our podcast, dick pills and reverse mortgages.
That's right.
That is the purpose of cable news.
True.
And you fill it in with things that will grab eyeballs.
Mm-hmm.
And controversy grabs eyeballs. And crackpots grab eyeballs. Sober discussions of political importance don't pull in people. So we have a lot of controversy. There was a time on MSNBC when Rachel Maddow went hammer and tongs at a guy named Bill Kristol, who was the wrongest man in America.
Right.
Wrong
now,
about
now
everything.
It's her
always
buddy.
Has been, always will be, blood-soaked, war pimp, scumbag.
Right.
Whose son-in-law now enjoys the same privilege that he does on the air.
Uh-huh.
Matthew Continetti. So went hammering tongs at him like, wow, that was tough, man. And then, this is really obscure, but I'll finish it off.
Okay.
A guy named Jonathan Greenberger.
Okay.
Who went from being, as far as I can tell, the editor of his college newspaper to an executive in charge of ABC News.
Oh, my.
Overnight.
Oh, my.
First hire out of the box was Bill Kristol. And because he has a unique and brilliant mind. And that was because every time Bill Kristol goes on the scrap heap of history, somebody drags him off and brushes him off and puts him back in front of a microphone. And everyone around him agrees to forget this ever happened. So the minute he became viable again, the minute he signed contracts with NBC and MSNBC and started showing up on the Morning Joe show, suddenly all the righteous indignation about, oh, my God, how the hell is Bill Kristol still alive is gone.
Yeah.
It is as if it was never mentioned. Now, they never put them in the same room together, but now Bill Kristol has a thing called the Bulwark. And Lawrence O'Donnell, Brian Williams has gone three times a week to promote his dumb podcast.
Oh, my God.
So clearly there is an agenda which we are not ever going to be told about that involves here's the quota of the number of conservatives and never Trumpers of this type you are going to put on the air this week. And they divvy it up however they divvy it up. But there's no rhyme or reason. There's no rhyme or reason to how they do it. My stepdad, my much late stepfather, used to teach math. And he used to teach logic. And he'd have this thing where here's a matchbox with something in it. And by rolling it and shifting it and twirling it and weighing it in your hand, you can sort of figure out the shape and size of the thing in the matchbox. You can deduce what it is.
Mm-hmm.
If you just look at how cable news behaves long enough, or New York Times, the Washington Post, you can deduce 90% of what their decision making is and predict pretty accurately how they're going to react every single time. So it doesn't surprise me at all that suddenly socialism is a banned word.
Right.
It doesn't surprise me at all that this is how they program things now, because this is a corporation run by Comcast to make money.
Yep.
And I don't look to them to the news anymore. I look to them to see what message is being bracketed for public consumption in order to sell dick pills and reverse mortgages.
Uh-huh.
And that's the way it is. I mean, I wish it were otherwise.
No,
but.
And that's true. Look, as I've made clear, look, I've had a career in radio. I may not be much of one these days, but, 40 years in the radio industry. And we always knew, even though, look, I programmed one of the best music stations in Los Angeles that I'm very proud of, but even we knew the music was the filler between the commercials. We were there to play the commercials because that's what brought in the revenue. And the music that we played was simply a vehicle to get people to listen to the commercials.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep. So that's why Cora Lewandowski has a job.
Yeah.
You know, it's as simple as that. It's, yep. You know, who can we haul off the scrap heap who will freak people out enough to watch this train wreck, which brings us to the debate, I suppose.
Yes. Okay. Good. Great segue, Driftglass. Driftglass is with us. So I'm guessing you watched it last night. Now, I gotta say, we had one just a week ago that actually was a good debate.
It was, and
shocker was, it was NBC who did it because they put on some pretty horrendous debates in this 10 that we've had so far. But last week, it seemed like they made a decision to back off, and when two candidates would get into a discussion, that they would let them go with it. Last night, what they did was, it didn't seem to matter who was speaking or what they were saying, when their time was up, they would be interrupted, even if they were in the middle of a pertinent point, and it didn't matter what was going on. It's like they weren't even paying attention. There were no follow-up questions asked. It was like these almost, it seemed like random, like they were picking questions out of a hat, because there was no flow. There was no relationship of one question to the next. It was chaotic.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. It was probably the worst presidential debate I've ever seen.
Yes, I would agree.
And it was all, this is all down to the moderators. The moderators did a terrible job. They seemed to figure out very early on that this thing was headed into the rocks, and they just sort of went with it. Yeah, okay, that's fine. That's cool. The candidates, once they figured out there were no traffic cops on duty, this turned into a Lord of the Flies scrum for who gets the conch, who gets the talking shell. And they all yelled over each other. And there were some bright moments here and there. People got in points that I think that were substantive. But overall, it was an embarrassment, underscored by the fact that at the commercial break, there was a commercial for Mike Bloomberg.
I know, right?
And there was a commercial for Medicare for All Will Kill Us.
That's right.
And like, oh, this is nothing but a money grab. This is just roller derby with commercials for some of the people who were in the roller derby. This is horrible.
Exactly.
And it went on for 2 hours.
Yep.
And again, there were parts of it that were just fine, but it was just bad. And nobody, it didn't do anything. It didn't advance anyone's agenda.
Nobody.
It didn't change any minds.
Nope.
It didn't dip into any substantive issues any deeper. There's a whole bunch of things I would like to hear people talk about.
Yeah. Well, climate change. Hello. Yeah. Right?
And
not one question was asked about climate change, but we did find out what the candidates think the biggest misconception is about them and what their personal mottos are.
Yeah, that was exciting. I just thought, oh, really? Really? It's if I were a tree, what kind of tree would I be?
What kind of twee would you be?
I'd be a very happy twee because I get to turn I'm booking the hours I spent on this against any future incarceration I might get and set the community service. Look, I've already done 2 hours of community service. It seemed like 8. So this goes right off my record because this was just awful. We did learn, again, if we needed to learn it a second time, that Mike Bloomberg really sucks at this.
Oh, my God. Jokes. Someone told him, tell a joke. So he tells a bad joke and he's like, let's get serious now. We were serious before you tried to tell a stupid joke. Oh, my God.
It reminds me from many, many years ago on The Simpsons, Krusty the Clown dying on stage.
Yes.
Now we're going to do the flapping dicky joke. Oh, please don't do that. Flapping dicky joke. Oh, and I'm going to mock Chinese people now. Oh, God, please don't do that. It was just, but you know, here's the thing. When you rent your own cheering section, it doesn't matter how funny you are.
Right. And that's
no matter what
thing.
You say, they're like, yay,
well,
Mike.
Sponsors were allowed to buy tickets. Now, it's just, you know, Michael Bloomberg was a sponsor because he advertised on the show. So you wonder why he had a cheering section? Hello.
And there were really good, one of the other podcasters, Frangela, the Frangela duo people, asked a very good question that jumped into my Twitter feed, which was, so Mike Bloomberg would expunge the records of the black and brown people that he harassed into jail. Really? And I thought, that's a big, fat, slow pitch that somebody needs to smack out of the park. But nobody did because it was a scrum. It was just yelling at each other. And, and there were moments that were capable where people should have seized them and run with them.
Well, here, let me play a couple of clips. Like, here's one that shows this happened all too often last night. And I'm seeing some people in the chat room saying, oh, gee, I'm glad I didn't watch last night. It's a good thing because this is an example of what kept happening.
Do we think health care for all, Pete, is some kind of radical communist idea? Do
Why
we think raising the minimum wage to a living wage? Do we think building
really
the millions of
this
units
really
of affordable housing
that
we need?
That
do we think raising taxes on billionaires is a radical idea?
Let's talk about what's radical about that plan. Senator,
is a radical idea.
The things you just named.
Do we think immigration reform?
The things you just named are the things
that the American people support by agenda. That is why I am beating Trump in virtually every poll that has gone and why I will defeat him.
We got to open this up.
We got to open this up. And then everybody else jumped in. It was Bernie Sanders answering a question. Pete Buttigieg jumps in and keeps talking and none of the moderators say, shut the fuck up.
Yep.
Unreal.
Yep. Yeah, if I may quote Blazing Saddles.
Yes.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy. You know? It's just everyone. What was the point of that? Other than Pete Buttigieg wanted a two shot of him and Bernie Sanders arguing for campaign purposes, and he got it. He got it several of them.
Yep.
Anyway, continue.
Okay, so here's another one, and this is I think it's Bloomberg going after Bernie Sanders. You know, Bernie, you're a commie, that kind of thing. Then Pete Buttigieg tries to jump in. And then at the end of this clip, you gotta wait to hear Joe Biden and how they dismiss him. The whole thing is, it would be funny if it weren't so sad.
You've praised the Chinese Communist Party for lifting more people out of extreme poverty than any other country. You also have a track record of expressing sympathy for socialist governments in Cuba and in Nicaragua. Can Americans trust that a democratic socialist president will not give authoritarians a free pass?
Okay, first of all, that's not a loaded question at all, because Bernie Sanders has ever praised authoritarian governments. Give me a fucking break.
What? Have you stopped beating the Statue of Liberty
exactly.
yet?
Exactly. Okay, so now listen to what happened.
Authoritarianism all over the world, and I was really amazed at what Mayor Bloomberg just said a moment ago. He said that the Chinese government is responsive to the Politburo.
That's right.
But who the hell is the Politburo responsive to? Who elects the Politburo? You got a real dictatorship there? Of course you have a dictatorship in Cuba. What I said is what Barack Obama said in terms of Cuba, that Cuba made progress on education. Yes, I think.
Really?
Really?
Yes, because there's no comparing those two comments.
What Barack Obama said is they made great progress on education and health care. That was Barack Obama.
I talked to Barack Obama.
Excuse me. Occasionally, it might be a good idea to be honest about American foreign policy. And that includes the fact that America has overthrown governments all over the world, in Chile, in Guatemala, in Iran. And when dictatorships, whether it is the Chinese or the Cubans, do something good, you acknowledge that.
This is 2020. We can't be reliving the Cold War.
Look, Barack Obama was abroad. He was in a town meeting. He did not in any way suggest that there was anything positive about the Cuban government.
Okay. Oh, and actually this wasn't the Biden comes in to defend Obama to say, the exact same thing that he said that Bernie said is not exactly what they said. It was a different one that I was looking at where Biden tried to jump in on another question and he said something there and they just cut him off and go to commercial. The whole thing was just such an embarrassment.
You really did have to sift through it and find, for example, Joe Biden mentioning his Catholic school training. It was a nice touch. It was a nice little sort of genial mention.
There,
and,
but,
and Pete Buttigieg name-checking his spouse as a teacher was a nice touch. Amy Klobuchar's answer on the coronavirus was good. I mean, it was substantive. It was good. It was serious. You know, don't go to my campaign page. Go to the CDC page. But really, you had to squint real hard to find anything redeeming about 2 hours of roller derby last night. And there's no winner. I mean, I don't score. I was a high school debater. I know what debates look like. This, what we do in this country has nothing to do with debate. We're not actually arguing anything. There are no actual judges. There's no actual penalty for lying. Mm-hmm. There's no evidence presented. This is just a bunch of pieces of someone's stump speech being thrown at each other.
Right.
And seven people on a stage, five people on a stage is too many.
I agree.
You're just
going to
end up screaming at each other unless you do one issue, round table, 2 hours.
Works for me.
Fine.
They could start with climate change.
They could start with climate change. I can think of at least one young man on MSNBC named Chris Hayes who would be a really good host of a substantive, energetic climate change debate on television. I would love to see that.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. All right, let me play one more clip because this is the one I was looking for. All right, this is on legalizing pot. Take it away, Bernie.
We have a criminal justice system today that is not only broken, it is racist. Got more people in jail than any other country on earth, including China. And one of the reasons for that is a horrific war on drugs. So I do believe that on day one, we will change the Federal Controlled Substance Act, which, if you can believe it, now equates heroin with marijuana. That's insane. We're going to take marijuana out of that and effectively legalize marijuana in every state in the country. What we are also going to do is move to expunge the records of those people who are arrested for possession of marijuana.
I'll tell you what else
we're going to do. We're going to provide help to the African-American, Latino, Native American community to start businesses to sell legal marijuana rather than let a few corporations control the legalized marijuana market.
All right, Senator Sanders, thank you.
I wrote the bill to set up drug courts.
All right, thank you, Vice President Biden. We will get back to you. The CBS News.
Thanks, Grandpa.
All right, thanks, Joe. You wrote the drug crime bill. We'll get back to you on
drug
that.
Court.
Yeah, good, good for
bill.
You. Drug court bill. Yeah,
good. Great. That's great. But and now we got to go to commercial.
That's right.
You know, I miss the League of Women Voters so much. I really do.
You and me both. And for those who don't remember, the debates never were run by the parties or the networks. It was the League of Women Voters.
Yes.
And they were fair. And they were events. They were serious events. You know how they used to admonish the crowd, do not applaud, be quiet? They didn't do any of that because they wanted this shit show. They wanted the booing. They wanted the chaos.
Well, when I used to teach school at Columbia College in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the evenings when I was teaching happened to coincide with Dick Cheney vice presidential debate. Now, Dick Cheney is an evil human being who walks the earth.
It's Cheney, not Cheney. Cheney.
Who's an unholy monster. Uh-huh. But I said, tonight we're not going to do technology. We're not going to do this. I'm going to roll on a TV and we're going to use class time to watch a debate because it is your civic duty to watch candidates for high office tell you what they're going to do if you choose to vote. And that's what we did because I really, really believe in civic engagement. I really do believe, look, I can force you to do anything. I can force you to, you know, write BS for 2 hours about the history of the Turing test, which I love.
Right.
But instead, we're going to take 2 hours of class time and watch this thing. And we did. And it was, you know, because I would never force a class to do that again. Because these are such a waste.
Not these debates. No. Never. No, it's horrible. It is horrible. And we're all,
The days of our youth were so much better there.
I know. It's the olden days were so much easier.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I look at this, if you squint real hard, you'll see that there are different ethnic groups. There's a gay person on the stage. There's a woman on the stage.
Amazing.
People of color were running for president. Had credible.
Yep.
So, all, if you look at it from the distance of a far future historian, you can see, well, things were changing. There was some ferment and there was a whole bunch of crazy, angry, old white people on one side and everyone else on the other. But then again, that's the problem. You have one party that's trying to be four parties.
Yeah.
Because everybody who's not a fucking fascist is in the same party. Right. And that's causing a lot of elbows to get into each other's eyes because
really big
we disagree with each other over stuff.
Maybe the tent's not big enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Driftglass, always a pleasure. Find him at driftglass.blogspot.com and proleftpod.com and on Twitter at Mr_Electrico. Driftglass, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for an enjoyable Wednesday. Appreciate
entirely
it.
My honor. Thank you so much.
I'll talk to you later. Bye. All right. Tomorrow, back with, Howie Klein because it's Thursday and Lawrence O'Donnell, the door's wide open. Any time that's good for you will make it work. Thanks everyone. Keep the faith. Bye.